Welcome to episode 1454 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive. 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are in the midst of a series on the life and times of the apostles. Our focus this week is on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter watched God tear down a wall he did not even realize was still present in his life, opening the door of the gospel to Cornelius and the Gentiles. Today, we discover that spiritual growth is rarely a straight line. Even after visions, miracles, Pentecost, and years of faithful leadership, Peter finds himself confronted by an old fear in a new setting, and learns that sometimes the most loving thing a brother can do is tell us the truth when we have drifted from it. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 14.
I want to tell you about the most uncomfortable conversation of my life after the cross, and I want to tell it honestly, which means telling it against myself. I have spent this whole story being honest about my failures, the courtyard, the sleeping in Gethsemane, the sword at the wrong moment. I have told those things plainly because they needed to be told. But this one is different. Those failures happened in crisis, in the dark, under pressure, in the grip of fear I did not know I had until it was already acting. This failure happened in daylight, slowly, with full awareness. Out of a kind of fear I should have been done with by then. His name will be familiar to you. I first knew him as Saul of Tarsus. You likely know him as Paul the Apostle. And he was right. I had known about Paul for years before I knew him well. Everyone in the early movement knew about him. As Saul of Tarsus, he was the man who had stood approving at Stephen's stoning, who had made it his mission to destroy the church, who had gone house to house in Jerusalem dragging believers off to prison. He was a man of letters, a Roman citizen, and a devout Pharisee. And then the Damascus Road. A light, a voice, 3 days of blindness, and Saul of Tarsus came out the other end as Paul, the most unlikely apostle who ever lived. He was trained under Gamaliel, a Pharisee of Pharisees, who now preached the faith he had once tried to destroy with a ferocity that left everyone slightly breathless. I met him early on, not long after his conversion. He came to Jerusalem and spent 15 days with me. 15 days. We talked, and I came away with the clear sense that whatever had happened on the Damascus Road was real, the same quality of encounter I had seen in the locked room, in the garden, on the shore. A man changed from the inside out. We agreed on everything that mattered. Jesus was Lord. The resurrection was real. The gospel was for all people. On those things we were completely aligned. The disagreement came later, in Antioch, at a table. Antioch was remarkable. It was the first place, I think, where the thing Jesus had begun really looked like what it was meant to look like. Jews and Gentiles at the same table, eating the same food, calling each other brother and sister without any of the hesitation that still marked Jerusalem. The community there had worked something out that most of us were still struggling toward. I went to Antioch, and I ate with the Gentile believers, freely, gladly. I had learned that lesson in Cornelius's house, or so I thought. And then certain people arrived from Jerusalem, people sent, or claiming to have been sent, by James, the Lord's brother, the pillar of the Jerusalem church, people who held firmly to the position that Gentile believers needed to observe the Jewish food laws, that the table could not simply be open to everyone without distinction, and I withdrew. Gradually, quietly, I stopped eating with the Gentile believers. I moved to the Jewish side of the room, as it were, and stayed there. And others followed me. Even Barnabas, who had been one of the most generous and open-hearted leaders in the whole movement, was carried along by the same current. I knew it was wrong. That is the part I cannot excuse. I was not confused about the theology. I had seen the sheet. I had stood in Cornelius's house and said God does not show favoritism and meant it. I knew what I was doing when I moved to the other side of the room. I did it anyway. Because the people from Jerusalem made me afraid. Because old habits of approval have very long roots. Because I was Simon Bar Jonah, the fisherman who cared what people thought, putting on the costume of Peter the Rock and hoping no one noticed the difference. Paul saw what I was doing. He saw it immediately and clearly, and without any of the diplomatic softening that the situation might have suggested was appropriate. He opposed me to my face. That is the phrase he uses in his letter to the Galatians, opposed to my face, in front of everyone.
If you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you force the Gentiles to live like Jews? We know that a person is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ.
He was right. Every word of it. I had no answer that was not a confession, and I did not give one in that moment. Not on my feet, in front of the community, with the people from Jerusalem watching. But I have given one since. Many times. To anyone who asked, and to many who did not ask, but needed to hear it. Paul was younger than me. He had not walked with Jesus on the roads of Galilee. He had not been in the upper room, had not seen the tomb, had not stood on the shore when the nets filled. Everything he knew about Jesus he had received through revelation and through the testimony of others, including me. And he was still right. Being closer to the source does not protect you from being wrong. Seniority is not the same as faithfulness. A man who has known the truth longer than another man can still betray it more completely because he knows better and does it anyway. That is what I had done at the table in Antioch. I had known better. I had done it anyway. I have thought many times about why this failure was different from the others. The courtyard was fear under extreme pressure. Antioch was fear dressed as prudence, operating in ordinary daylight, in a situation where I had every reason and every resource to do the right thing and chose not to. The courtyard undid me in an instant. Antioch was a slow drift, an inch at a time, each inch individually defensible, until I looked up and found myself on the wrong side of the room. That kind of failure is harder to catch, and in some ways, harder to recover from, because it requires admitting not just that you were afraid, but that you chose the fear, that you let it lead you somewhere you knew you should not go. Paul did me a service that day, a painful one, the kind of service only someone with nothing to lose from you can render. He had no history with me that required protecting, no relationship that required softening the blow. He simply told the truth, in public, and let it land where it landed. I did not like him for it, not immediately, but I came to. He called me Cephas in his letters, the name Jesus gave me, not Peter the failure, not Simon the fisherman who drifted to the wrong side of the table. Cephas. He held me to the name even when I was not living up to it. That is, I think, what brothers do.
One of the most dangerous spiritual conditions is not open rebellion, but quiet drift. Rarely do we wake up one morning and decide to abandon our convictions. More often, we move an inch at a time, adjusting our behavior to avoid criticism, seeking approval, choosing comfort over courage, until we find ourselves standing somewhere we never intended to be. Peter's story reminds us that even mature believers remain vulnerable to this kind of compromise. It also reminds us that God's grace sometimes arrives in the form of a difficult conversation. We need people who love us enough to tell us the truth, and we need the humility to receive it. Faithfulness is not demonstrated by never needing correction. It is demonstrated by allowing God to use correction to bring us back to the truth. To be continued.